Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 189.
This week on the podcast, the Nevada caucus was just another time that caucuses made no sense.
Plus, Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio win decisive non-first place victories in the South Carolina primary.
Jeb, exclamation point, has retired his exclamation point and can now just go back to being called George's little brother.
Mitt Romney will endorse his ex-Mormon brethren Marco Rubio because the whole world is one giant conspiracy.
Donald Trump picks a fight with the Pope over which one is the real Christian. Of course, only one of them was disowned by their childhood church.
And Obama is going to Cuba because he's more fun than the rest of us.
And a totally reliable source offers new definitive proof that Obama murdered Justice Scalia.
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
And we have a special guest in the studio with us today.
That's right.
Because my mom is here.
Carla Nordstrom.
Hi.
Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
She's my favorite poet.
Oh, yes, right. Our favorite haiku poet, Carla Nordstrom.
Yeah.
Writing an important topical haiku every day of the year.
I think you should. Did you tell her what I said about that?
No.
I think you should be doing that on Twitter.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, really?
It's perfect for Twitter.
Yeah, because it's like the right amount of characters, and I feel like people would, like, eat them up.
But can, on Twitter...
Did you have a question about Twitter?
We'll explain... Lila will explain Twitter to you later, because I can't explain it to you.
I'm working hard at understanding Twitter, by the way, guys, and I've been actively
working on
understanding our Twitter account.
I know.
So follow us there.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, exciting week, because this weekend... We had the Democratic Nevada caucus, and we had the Republican South Carolina primary.
Yeah.
Those are both states that split their Democratic and Republican caucus and primary dates.
Yes.
So we have this week the opposite of what I just said, that I'm not going
right.
to try to say again. The Republican caucus in Nevada.
Right, which is on Tuesday, I think, actually.
Yeah, it's
so
on Tuesday.
So they're not on, it's all over the place.
It's everything, it's chaos.
Yeah.
But in any case, so we have caucus results for the Democrats. Hillary Clinton finally pulled out a real win at something.
Finally.
Good for her.
She had a...
Taken a stand.
A tie win
a
in
Iowa.
A tie
win in Iowa.
A blowout loss in New Hampshire.
And now she's...
And now a 5-point...
It might be termed a blowout win in Nevada.
She's back to being the inevitable candidate again.
I would
again.
Argue that it's just a fine win.
I agree.
Considering she lost a 15-point lead in the last month there. I don't know if I would call it a blowout, but who am I? Who am I to know?
Right.
She received 52.7% of the vote there. Sanders got 47.2. She's going to get 19 delegates, and he'll get 15.
Right.
Weird question. Only 96% are reporting still. What happened to the last 4%?
Right? I mean, these caucus things, like, I understand. Well, I mean, that always seems to happen. It's like it takes a while to... But, like, these caucus sites should have been accounted for at the time and then should have just been reported at the time. Like, I don't understand. It's not going to change the outcome, so it's not really that big of a deal, but it was just odd that 20 minutes ago when I was on Huffington Post, it said 96% reporting, and I was like,
The missing 4%?
Yeah.
Who knows where the last 4% of Nevada is?
Who really cares?
Right, exactly.
I mean, the caucuses are just so bonkers anyway.
It's another one of those caucuses...
Yeah.
Not like the Republicans in Iowa, like the Democrats in Iowa, where they all go stand in different corners of a room and then shout at each other.
Yeah.
So that is, again, a system that makes no sense to me, which
I
is
agree.
Continuing to make no sense in
Nevada.
Well,
and the other thing that I think is interesting about that is so many people say that it benefits Sanders because it's usually the activists that come out. It's the real diehards that come out. But most people who sort of think they know about these things contend that he probably won the popular vote in both of those two that he lost if you were to actually count it, which they don't. But, I mean, you see, obviously, they're not in every single precinct, but, I mean, how many precincts did we see that was, like, Hillary Clinton was hardly viable?
Right.
I mean, she was obviously winning
any
in some of the big places
really,
and stuff.
Any precinct that was really,
really
big would had a ton of people turn out. She didn't. She barely showed up viable.
Yeah. So, anyway.
It's like the Electoral College.
I'm not sure that it...
Small states get more of a choice in the president than big states, and in... Nevada, small districts get more of a choice than big districts in terms of who they're going to support.
I think that it benefits whoever has the best on-the-ground strategy, which was obviously her. I mean, he just arrived, and as they said on CNN a million times yesterday, basically just arrived in Nevada in the the late fall.
Right. Her campaign director was her 2008 Nevada campaign director.
Right, exactly.
So She had a slight advantage in terms of organization. Mm-hmm. Overall, though, they're tied in delegates in terms of elected delegates.
Right, 51 to 51.
She's ahead 502 to 70 right. when you count superdelegates.
She has all
so
the superdelegates.
So that's
scary. Right, and I've been seeing a lot of people like get antsy about that again, but everybody was antsy about that in 2008. I think maybe this time around there's more reason to be because I think the superdelegates...
It's not two establishment candidates.
Right, exactly. Like, those... The reason that the superdelegates exist is sort of to not have a candidate like Sanders.
Right.
Whereas in 2008, it wasn't to not have a candidate like Obama. They had just all come out for Hillary early, and then at a certain point, it looked like Obama was going to win, and they were like, well, okay, fine. I don't trust that they're all going to do that if at a certain point it looks like Sanders
right into his narrative if they don't, and he loses because of that. So that's a disaster for the party in its own way.
Yeah.
So but I would argue that they should reconsider how they're going to determine those votes.
Well, they should do like Alan Grayson is doing.
Yeah, they should auction them off.
Auctioning his off.
Or not even. He's not auctioning it off. He's auctioning it off to voters.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to pay for it.
You don't have to pay for it.
Yeah.
He wants you to pay for it. Because as soon as you vote, he asks you to donate to him. But you don't have to.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a choice that we can all make after voting.
Yeah.
But so in any case, this is something that Democrats are getting antsy about, but I also think is not really a discussion to have until June.
No, I agree.
Which, by the way, Our primary is not until June.
I know.
And I'm feeling so sad about that because I feel like this has been so exciting. And what if it's not as exciting in June?
I know.
What if we don't get to vote for anyone because our lives are terrible in California and we never get to vote for anyone in a primary?
I know. Doesn't that suck?
I'm going to vote for him anyway. Well, I'm not afraid.
Oh, I'm too. Yeah. He'll be on the ballot. So,
I know how to write in a candidate anyway, right. Even if he's not on the ballot. But he'll be on the ballot. Yeah. Meanwhile, some exciting, interesting entrance polls from Nevada.
Yeah.
Some interesting results. Obviously, he won the under 45 vote because when has he ever not won the under 45?
Three out of four people.
76% to 21% These numbers are so lopsided and crazy that I often have a hard time understanding how brains are computing this information.
Now, you may be wondering how he won everybody under 45, 76% to 21% and still lost. And that's because almost everybody was over the age of, like, a third was over the age of 65.
A retirement state.
And, like, another third was between 45 and 65.
A lot of old people in Nevada.
It was
the big old people.
Well, over half of the people were over 45.
And obviously, she won that vote.
She won those big time.
When is she ever not?
Yeah.
Old people love Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
But, again, they did some of the same exit poll or entrance poll questions that they've been doing to sort of compare it to what we saw in New Hampshire and Iowa. Yeah. First of all, again, these are the most ridiculous questions on Earth.
They ask weird questions.
They ask weird questions like, who's looking for a president who cares about people like me? Which is like, everyone should be.
Right. But Sanders wins that going away.
Sanders wins that going away. So Hillary Clinton's people don't think that she cares about them.
Yeah.
I guess. I don't know.
50% of the people said they wanted to continue Obama's policies, and she wins that going away. But 40% said they wanted more liberal, so that's heartening.
Yeah. And, of course, he wins that going away as well.
Yeah.
Because Clinton finally found a state where more women voted for her than not.
Right.
So we got there, guys.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sanders won among men, though.
Yep.
So, I mean, it was pretty close overall, but Sanders won the Latino vote by a huge margin, and she won the African-American vote by a large margin. So that's the interesting story is that he won the Latino vote for a lot of reasons.
Yeah.
One of which is that's the fastest growing minority in the country.
Yeah.
I mean, minority vote in the country.
Right.
Like that's the vote that's going to deliver Arizona to the Democrats and maybe even Texas to the Democrats. And if Latino voters are looking for a progressive candidate and not a sort of establishment candidate, that's exciting.
Yeah.
And that's unexpected. We did not, that's not what happened in 2008 in that state and really anywhere, I don't think. So this is a shift away from her, which is why I think we've been saying, like, we can't really, there aren't the same coalitions anymore. We can't rely on the same coalitions
and that's
at all.
This
is a whole world of difference.
Totally. And we talked about that after New Hampshire because there were so many different, you know, there were a lot of different groups in those exit polls that she had won in 2008 that she lost in 2016. Granted, she lost everything in New Hampshire.
Right.
But regardless, there were some similar groups in Nevada, too. And people... The same people who are voting for her in 2008 aren't, and then she's also getting
some
new
votes.
Odd. And the same with Sanders, is sort of like pulling some of her people from 2008.
Right. He's
like
pulling independence out of her.
People are looking for different things than they were in 2008, I think. Or not, I think. I mean, these numbers prove
definitively.
That, for sure. But
math is showing us
that. She won 38% of independents in 2008, and she won just 18% the other day. She won lower income voters in 2008. She lost those on Saturday. First time caucus goers went to Sanders.
Always.
Of course.
but he lost African-American voters 74 to 24. I mean, he lost.
Right. I think that was only like 12% of the electorate there. But that is obviously a problem.
But that's a problem because we're about to head into states with much larger African-American populations.
Right.
But we've been seeing in South Carolina huge events at colleges with a lot of younger African-American voters coming out for Sanders. So
yeah.
I'm sort of interested to see if that is a vote that doesn't vote as a block, as I suspected they would not, because they are just people like all of us that need to vote about things that they matter. They care about.
But that was sort of that was Clinton's coalition, basically.
Yeah.
It was the people over 65. It was women, finally, and black voters and people who consider themselves to be Obama loyalists.
Which is hilarious.
Right? I know.
The fact that she is winning the Obama legacy vote is so curious to me.
Yeah.
But media declared her back on track.
Right.
Clear path to victory.
Right. Well, and we were talking about this right before the podcast. I mean, like, after New Hampshire, the media was like, you know, she's going to fire all of her campaign staff. All of the establishment is panic stricken that she's just like, you know, it's like, it's whatever the most insane thing
this time
to happen.
It's a blowout.
It's a
5% win blowout.
Right. We can all just go back to her being the winner again and carry on with ourselves. And there are, besides the fact that that's just on its, you know,
ridiculous,
but like, there's also a lot of things that point to that not being the case.
Yeah. Well, and
specifically just this last week, she's behind nationally for the first time in a poll.
Yeah, that's, and it is a Fox News poll, so we can take that with what we need, with a grain of salt if we want. But this is a big, he was already tying her in some national polls, and this is the first poll that we're seeing him pulling ahead.
It was a 10-point gain for him and a 5-point loss from her in January. I mean, yes, you can say it's a Fox News poll, but I mean, they're still a news organization. They're using similar methodologies, one would think. To come up with these numbers as, you know, other places.
It shows a trend that is not turning back, you know?
Right.
And she also, he's ahead in some states coming up that
are
going to be.
A lot of states coming up. And I realize they're not the huge delegate rich ones, but like, this is.
But the delegate rich ones don't vote until way later.
No, exactly.
Yeah, until June.
And as we've talked about, like, that's why it was genius of him to continue to be able to debate her, to get those extra debates out of her. But I mean, she's going to win, you know, a lot of states on Super Tuesday. She's going to win some of the big ones. She's going to win Texas when that comes. She's probably going to win Florida when that comes. But I mean, you know, he's ahead in Minnesota. He's ahead in Massachusetts. He's ahead in Alaska. He's ahead in Maine. He's ahead. And
his
Right. He's not going to get. It's not just going to be over. I think a lot of people are just like, oh, well, now it's back to being over again. And that's just not reality.
Well, he has. Oh, yes, go.
No, I was going to say, I think that's the press narrative.
You're right.
It's over. And I think one of her problems is that she's not addressing these real issues. She should have come out of Nevada and said, you know, I learned something from this. I may have won. I'm very grateful to the people of Nevada, but I learned something. I learned where I need to do more work with Hispanic voters.
Mm-hmm.
But, and she's turning off a whole group of potential supporters
by not
doing those things. And that's what I worry about, is that she's not paying attention to where, you know, where the real votes are, and that this is not something that Bernie's going to say, oh, I guess, you know, she won, I lost, I'm going to walk away.
He needs
to stay in it until the convention, so that in the convention they are represented, the people.
Yeah, so absolutely. And his ideas end up on the platform.
And they end up on the platform.
But we're also not, you're absolutely right, we are also basically in the same place as Obama won Iowa in 2008, and then she won New Hampshire, and she also won Nevada. I think he ended up somehow getting more delegates than her in Nevada, but I mean, nobody was declaring this over then.
There were attempts.
I mean,
there were attempts at that time. There's always attempts. This is how the narrative goes.
Yeah.
It's, first of all, a bombastic headline sells better than a not bombastic headline.
You're right.
You should always write a bombastic headline, even if you have nothing to say.
Yep.
And that's a media lesson that the media knows.
Yeah.
But so I think that we're going to see that narrative continue to play out in media. But I also think that they're going to have a hard time dissuading Sanders voters who are literally only going to the polls to vote for Sanders and not to vote against Clinton.
Right.
That it's not worth them showing up.
Oh, no.
You know, I don't think that that's the kind of vote that he's relying on. And he has no reason to drop out. He's got the funding. His campaign's super cheap to run.
Yep.
And he can just sort of flake around and coach till the end of time, right.
Yeah.
flying around the country.
And win the Oklahoma caucus and with, keep yeah. picking up delegates.
Exactly.
You know, like, I mean, you know,
like, why not?
And that's what Obama was doing in 2008, exactly. too. Lest yeah. we forget, yeah. you know? I mean,
he
this was his plan.
He was going to random places and picking right. up delegates. This is, because, this is a very scary reality for them because he has way more delegates than he should have on the fringe candidacy that he's running.
Yes.
I mean, he's got real delegates.
Yeah.
This is not just like some random guy who's like saying nonsense to, you know.
Yeah.
He's not Ben Carson.
He's certainly going to have more delegates than Ron Paul had in 2012. And Ron
when
Paul
he staged a coup, staged tried to stage a coup in the convention. Exactly.
Yeah.
But he also has delegates who know what they want done. And they're going to be very verbal.
That's
about
true.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's very different for the Democrats because
I'm sure that's true.
Activist.
He's
delegates.
Got activist delegates. Yeah, activist he does. Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can always get behind an activist delegate.
Yeah.
Or an activist anything. Let's be honest.
Right.
Yeah. But so in any case, we have even his home state of Vermont coming up.
Yeah.
And it's
Betty wins that.
I'm gonna take a guess.
Yeah.
Also, I want to know by what margin he's going to win that. I'm sort of, I know that that's like a clear win for him, but what if he wins like 90% of the vote? Like that would be so exciting, so guys. Good.
Except I don't think he is going to because I think there are people in Vermont who are nervous about whether he can win the general election. People of my generation.
Sure,
or a lot of old
people. People over 50. Who,
and in a little while, we're going to have an editorial from my mom about young voters from the perspective of someone of her generation.
Yeah.
But first, we're going to tell you about the results in South Carolina in the GOP primary, because that was a delicious run of insanity as well.
Yeah.
We have Trump won. What a shocking surprise by 10 points.
Yep.
He's in at 32.5%. Rubio sneak attack second place victory.
That's right.
And it was something he considered a victory. At 22.5%.
Gave another victory speech.
Gave another victory
he
speech.
He gave a third place victory speech another, in Iowa. Gave a second place victory speech. Out of South Carolina.
They said this could never happen.
That's right.
They didn't say that, Marco. They said you could lose this primary, and you did.
You did.
Ted Cruz at 22.3%, big crushing loss to him because he was on the rise there.
Right.
And also, this is the exact kind of crazy pants state that he should have won
going
away.
Well, this was like, and that's why it was.
The electorate is something like, 74% born again?
Yeah, more than in Iowa.
That's
74%. It was 64 in Iowa.
I mean, that's too many.
And he won Iowa.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting that he won Iowa.
It's easy to forget because he didn't win Iowa. He won Iowa.
Oh, no, Cruz did. Oh, right. But yes.
He didn't win Iowa because no one even bothered to pay attention to what he was doing in Iowa.
Yeah.
Rubio won Iowa by coming in third.
Right, by getting third.
You know, Trump won
Iowa. Lost
to win because he got more coverage out of that than he should have considering he didn't win. Yeah. Anyway, Bush at 7.8%, Kasich at 7.6%, Carson at 7.2%. Guess which one of those guys is out of the race?
God. Jeb.
It's
gone.
It's not Carson.
Crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Also, money was such a curse to him. Money really can't buy you everything, guys.
No.
We learned an important lesson about finances in this
we
race.
We did. I know. I feel like if this has given, you know, obviously, I mean, we talk about it all the time. Citizens United is a total disaster and, you know, we need campaign finance reform. But if there's one bright spot from this campaign, it's that all the super PAC money in the world, if you don't have actual people funding your campaign, whether they're giving you $2,300 at a time or, like Sanders is doing, 3 million people giving you $20 at a time, you still have to have that money.
Yep.
Because
all the money in the world can't buy you voters if you're a shit candidate.
That's right.
And that's what we learned.
That's what we learned.
You can't prop just anybody up.
No.
And you certainly can't try to rerun the Bush family.
And you can't pay your staffers with the super PAC money.
So true. Yeah.
And I think it's also very interesting the role that money's playing in this because it's kind of, it's not as important in the election. You've got a situation.
Well, the corporate money especially.
Yeah, the corporate money is not there. Yeah. The fact that the Koch brothers are sitting it out.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's exciting.
Yeah.
And interesting. And also the fact that how you get the money has become a conversation in the Democratic primary that's starting to bleed over a little into the Republican primary because Donald Trump is sort of running on a vaguely campaign finance reform platform. But you see Hillary Clinton now walking around going, a vast majority of our donors gave under $100, which isn't as impressive as the actual average being $27 from 3 million people, 3 million donations or whatever.
Yeah.
But is a sort of a telling point that where you get the money is becoming a part of the conversation, which is new.
Yeah.
In any case, here's how all of this terribleness with Donald Trump happened.
Yeah.
First of all, 74% of voters are born again. 81% identify as very conservative. Mm-hmm. 53%, however, said they felt betrayed by the Republican Party. Trump won in a landslide.
Yeah.
40% said they're angry at the federal government. Trump also won that group. 47% that the candidate should be an outsider. I'm not shocked to report that Trump won 61% of that group.
Yep.
But 75% of voters in that primary support a ban on Muslims entering the country.
God.
What? What?
Yeah.
Don't do that.
No, I agree. But what's interesting, though, is if 75% of them support that, 40% of that 75 voted for someone other than Donald Trump.
I know. Well, because here's the secret. All of them are terrible.
See, that's the thing. I mean,
Robert
obviously,
Reich actually released a video this week that was about how Ted Cruz is actually worse than Donald Trump. And he was like, Donald Trump's terrible, but he's not an ideologue because he has no idea what he thinks and he's ad-libbing.
Right.
Ted Cruz is a controlled ideologue lone wolf.
Totally. We've talked about it before. Yeah. I mean, you know, like at least with Trump, you sort of get
You don't know what you're getting.
You get some accidental good policies.
Right.
And sure, you get the racist, but he's not. He's just more vocally racist
than
Ted
Cruz.
Yeah,
no, he's not less racist than those guys.
He's not actually more racist.
They're all too racist.
He's just being more vocal about
it. None of these people are an appropriate amount of racist because right. all of them are horribly racist.
Right.
Like, there is not a choice to be made in this race where you can be like, but he's at least open-minded.
Yeah.
None of them are. They're all horrible racist.
Yeah. Yeah.
In any case, Ben Carson had funny spin.
Oh, yeah.
On this. He would, as a person who placed last, basically.
Lost. Yeah, what's he still doing in the race?
He's not doing anything in the race.
Right,
he's just in the race. He's just on the ballot. He's just around.
Yeah.
He finally did his laundry.
Yeah.
He thought to himself, I'll head out on the trail again.
Yeah.
What am I doing?
But he sent out a tweet that he said that he was going to receive the same amount of delegates as all the candidates except Trump. And he's absolutely right about that. And that's because they all got zero.
It's a winner-take-all state, which is also concerning. I think that some of these early states are going to have to, the winner-take-all states are going to have to rethink what their plan is because it's very, this is like, we're entering a point of no return with the Trump thing.
Right, exactly.
And if he starts winning winner-take-all states while the rest of them are floundering around with four establishment guys in at 7% or whatever, they're 20% or whatever they're up to, that's not it.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, people have been, again, we were talking about this earlier, but I mean, people have been talking about how Hillary is back to being inevitable again. Trump is way more so. I mean, he's now won two of the first three states by landslides. He's got the next batch of states. Is there what they call the SEC primary? He's going to win all or most of those.
Yeah.
This is becoming
an unstoppable train, guys.
Yeah. I mean, Ted Cruz was tailor-made for him, and especially after he'd already won Iowa.
This state is 74% evangelical. You know who's not an evangelical Christian?
Donald Trump.
You know who's not really much of a Christian at all?
At all.
Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Like, it's so curious that this is happening to...
Yeah.
I think Ted Cruz is actually that hateable.
I think that's
I think if you're an evangelical Christian, you're insane and you're not having good ideas, but you probably still think that you like nice people. You probably still think of yourself as a nice person and imagine that you would like to be surrounded by other nice people.
Yeah.
And you're not getting that with Ted Cruz. You're getting someone who makes evangelicals look like assholes. And that's not what you want.
No.
You know. In any case... Because of this, the Republican establishment, panicking as they are, is starting to really rally behind Rubio. So you saw Bush drop out. I wonder when his Rubio endorsement is going to come because that money has to go somewhere.
That's going to pain him. It's like you said, is it going to be like a 3 a.m. email?
Is
like
it going to be the Santorum style with
Mitt
Romney
in 2012? Yeah.
Romney, by the way, just endorsed Rubio, speaking of him. And they're apparently buddies.
Yeah.
They have Mormonism in common.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah.
He'd apparently been wanting to do it for a while, but out of, you know,
respect for
Jeb,
the other old money man in the race.
Yeah, exactly. He hadn't done it yet.
Yes. But Rubio was someone he had considered on his VP shortlist. So they are apparently buddies anyway. And now that Rubio and Bush aren't buddies anymore because they destroyed each other in this primary, Rubio needs a father figure to go to, a political father figure.
Yeah.
And he just went to the next logical choice after a Bush.
But I think we're going to see the entire... This is the first of many.
Yeah,
I mean, this is the entire Senate pretty soon is going to make a collective endorsement of Marco Rubio.
Also,
every single governor, all of the people who have dropped out.
What is going to happen when they all endorse him and Trump still is the candidate?
Well, that's the... I mean...
They're going to all have endorsed somebody who's not... Like, they're going to look so foolish.
Well, that's
There's
the
no
thing.
Winning, though. I mean, what are they going to do?
Well, and that's... what was the poll number here? And it's not going to be the same in every state, but it was 47% wanted somebody who didn't have political experience or came from outside of Washington. That 47% doesn't give one single damn whether Mitt Romney endorses Marco Rubio or not. Nope. I mean, you know, it's like that's irrelevant.
They didn't vote last time.
It's the same reason why Sanders people don't care who endorses Hillary Clinton.
Right, yeah, I mean, the Pope could endorse Hillary Clinton.
The whole point.
And Sanders people would be like, see, the establishment. Right. Like,
exactly.
I mean, this is sort of like, it's like a sort of shadow race. This establishment race.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with anything that's really happening.
It certainly doesn't have anything to do with winning the nomination.
No.
It doesn't appear, does it?
Does not seem to be.
Yeah.
In any case, they're trying to sort of get everyone out so that they can get down to just Rubio, Trump, and Cruz.
Right.
That's a lose, I think, for them. Because two of the three of those...
And for America.
And for America. Two of the three of those are not acceptable even to them. So,
right.
And now Trump also picked a fight with the Pope. Speaking of the Pope.
God.
This week. He said, the Pope said of Trump, the Pope actually picked a fight with Trump, if
right.
we're really going to be honest.
Yeah. Well, he had just been to Mexico.
Right.
It was like his first trip, or right. the first Pope trip to Mexico, I think, in a while.
Yeah.
But he came out of there and had a press conference and said anybody who... Wait, where's...
A person
who thinks only about building walls, wherever they may be, and not about building bridges is not Christian. So, obviously, talking about Donald Trump there.
Right. Donald Trump responded at a South Carolina event saying, for a religious leader to question a person's faith is disgraceful.
Yeah.
I would argue that it's fair game to question Donald Trump's faith because he doesn't appear to actually have any. And I say
right.
that as someone without faith myself, who's not, I'm not judging him for not having faith. But he's claiming to have it. And I
right.
would say it's totally fair to question his faith. He was disowned by his childhood church. They wrote a letter rebuking him. So
yeah.
I don't see where his Christianity comes into play.
Yeah.
But in any case, he accused the Mexican government of using the Pope as a pawn. His view of world politics is fascinating.
But then he took it one step further even, and he said if and when the Vatican is attacked by ISIS,
yes.
which
as
everyone knows is ISIS's ultimate trophy.
I don't think everyone knows that, but continue.
The Pope can have only wished and prayed that Donald Trump would have been president because that would have not happened. ISIS would have been eradicated, unlike what is happening now with our... All talk, no actions policies.
He's going to stop ISIS
from attacking
the Vatican.
Attacking the Vatican.
Finally, someone is dealing with the real threats.
I'm sure that changes everything. The Pope's
whole
understanding of
totally.
The race has just been flipped on
of
its
course,
head, probably.
Of course.
Yeah.
There's nothing like saying that you'll protect the Vatican to make Americans in America, where the Vatican is not, want to vote for you.
Yeah. And I don't think this won't hurt him against or amongst evangelicals. It might even play pretty well because they don't like the Pope because they think he's a
right.
socialist.
No, exactly. I was going to say, none of the people that are voting for him like the
Pope.
There's
a lot of Catholics who vote, by
right.
the way. They like the Pope.
Yeah.
There are a lot of non-Catholics who like the Pope. You probably like the Pope sometimes.
There's times that I've liked the Pope.
Right? I mean,
there's times that I didn't, obviously. Right.
But I mean, that's probably a first in your lifetime,
yeah.
having the Pope say something
sure
and you'd
is.
Be like, oh, well, that's
yeah.
not completely ridiculous.
Yeah. No.
You know,
sounds
so
right.
I mean, it's like...
I would say this Pope and I share a similar moral compass, at least, which is
more
than I could ever have said for the Pope
yeah.
in the past.
Yeah.
But
well, I mean, it says something, I think, that the Pope probably agrees more with the Jewish guy than he does... Any,
yes.
the Jewish atheist than he does
right,
anybody
exactly.
else.
And
which is true.
That's true. Also, I would imagine that in this day and age, most Catholics are, they're maybe anti-choice and whatever, but they're not really voting Democrat, Republican in this world.
No.
They're maybe making up the more conservative wing of the Democratic Party because there are certain issues they don't agree with the party base on.
Yeah.
But Catholics are not. Who,
yeah.
they don't belong, they don't have anything in common with these evangelical voters.
Yeah.
They have more in common with Jews.
Right.
I mean, to be honest. Also, some Cruz eligibility cases finally gearing
up. Popping up.
We have one, a Ben Carson supporter, going to a judge in Chicago claiming that Ted Cruz is not a natural born citizen. So we're going to judge Maureen Ward Kirby.
Yeah, she actually
heard a case
the
in
initial
Chicago
arguments
about that
on Friday.
Yeah,
and they have set a hearing, I think, for the beginning of March. Oh, it's on Super Tuesday,
oh,
by
perfect,
the way.
Perfect.
Yeah, for them to have the.
Well, it's to kick him
oh,
off
the
their primary ballot.
Right. Well, right, and but that's the day that they're going to have the dismissal hearing.
Right.
For because Cruz is obviously going to have it dismissed.
Yes.
But there are also cases like this popping up in a few other places too.
Texas,
there's one in
New
Texas,
York.
New York.
And someone in Houston has asked the Supreme Court to weigh in. I don't see...
Sure, why not?
I mean, at this point, there's only 8 of them and they'll disagree. So I don't know that we'll get anywhere with that, but why not? Get them on the record.
Yeah.
See what they think.
Yeah, I think it was...
I would be very curious, actually, to see what the Supreme Court would think about this because I've been surprised where people have come down on both sides of this argument.
Yeah.
Because I think that clearly the question of natural born citizen has not been determined to anyone's satisfaction, because we keep trying to rewrite it to not apply to Democrats and to apply not, you know, like, I mean, our sense of what a natural born citizen is varies wildly from race to race.
Yeah.
So I would love to see what the Supreme Court says. And I don't think it would be necessarily what I would think they would say.
Yeah. Well, we know that they love to pick presidents.
Well, that's true.
The Supreme Court.
That's true. Yes. Although the man who most loved to pick presidents was laid to rest this week. So
that's true. He was. We're going to tell you how he died.
He was laid to rest, by the way, as the results for the Nevada caucus were coming out, which was an infuriating conflict of interest.
Because you were streaming it at the time, and you were like, all they're showing is the Pope funeral. Or maybe that was my mom was watching TV.
No, we were both doing it, probably. It was a disaster.
Go to Nevada.
Right.
Get off the stage.
I don't care if you just show lines of people trying to get into the caucuses.
That's
more exciting than watching a funeral.
Yeah.
Maybe, though, while Ted Cruz is on the stand for his citizenship, they can finally try him for the Zodiac killings, because according to the internet, he was responsible for those.
Somebody has Rick Santorum'd.
Thank God someone is doing the people's work on the internet.
He's so good.
When you type Ted Cruz into Google right now, the first thing that comes up is Ted Cruz the Zodiac killer?
Which, as much as I would like him to be, just because that'd be
a win.
He was not alive
when
those killings happened.
Also, what a random...
Such a random thing, right? It started as like a couple guys like doing what they did to Santorum.
Yeah.
Where they just... It became like an internet thing.
It's like a meme.
It's been going for a couple years, apparently. It started like in 2013. And like, it's totally random, but that's...
Listen, if there's anything that I would try to internet meme Ted Cruz with, it's a serial killer thing. The man looks like a serial killer. So I think that's clearly how this came about.
Yeah.
But also, speaking of nothing related to this at all.
That's right.
Obama.
That's a good segue.
Thank you. Yeah. Going to Cuba for the first time in his own life. But he is also the first sitting president to go to Cuba in 88 years.
Yeah.
Going to hang out with Raul. And see what they can...
But not Fidel.
Not Fidel. Not going to see Fidel.
Not seeing him.
P.S. Is anyone seeing Fidel?
Is Fidel
just like sitting in his old person home writing screeds for grandma paper there? I think that's...
If I were him, I would want to secretly go see Fidel.
Oh, I would go see Fidel. Not secretly. Right. I would openly want to go see Fidel.
I can understand why maybe he would want to do it secretly. I've also openly already seen Fidel.
But I feel like... That's what would be exciting about doing that.
Right?
I don't see why else you would want to go there. Raul's great and all, but is he as great as meeting a sort of icon of American opposition? Like, no.
Yeah. I agree.
In any case.
He's supposedly going to be going there on this trip to do some personal diplomacy, to talk to Castro about, you know, specifically about human rights, to open the state-run economy a little bit more than it is right now, because
capitalism.
The hope was, when we started opening relations with Cuba, that some of these things would start happening.
Right.
Cuba has
experience doing this, where they have entered these kinds of negotiations with other countries that are capitalist countries and have offered them contracts for minority ownership of state-run companies to come in and do like tourism stuff and stuff like that. But they very firmly believe that they need to maintain a majority ownership of any foreign investment that comes into their country. And I can understand, given their history, why they think that way. But so I don't see them just sort of like rolling over on this. I know, you know, some of these things that Raul has opened up have been to kind of promote the tourism industry and get some of the things that the state-run economy itself couldn't really support, like good food and like nice hotels and things off the ground, and a kind of tourism that they really weren't able to offer before, where people could stay in people's homes and like really see what life was like on the ground. I don't see them being all that amenable to suddenly just like opening up larger kinds of, you know, opening themselves up to larger kinds of investment and also bigger kinds of companies coming in privately.
Yeah.
That's partially on us, because we abused that privilege the last time we had it.
Sure.
So I can see why. But I think it's nice that we're normalizing relations despite this not really going forward. I think that over time it will probably change, but that I don't expect that it was, I never expected it to happen as fast as they seem to expect it was going to happen. Like, it was kind of naive to be like, this country's been sitting there stubbornly and not doing what we want for 50 years, but they'll probably want to do it once we send tourists their way.
I know.
Like, I don't think that that makes any sense to think that way.
No. And I don't think that him going down there is going to, I mean, it's a,
no, he can go down there, but I think it's an important diplomatic move. Totally. So why not do it anyway?
Yeah, no.
You know, I mean, Robert Menendez isn't in favor, but he's also under indictment for corruption charges. So I don't know that he has the authority to tell us not to do that.
I know.
A lot of Republicans are angry. Yeah. Not Jeff Flake, though. Jeff Flake, if nothing else, very pro opening relations with Cuba. Sees a business opportunity there because he's not an idiot. He is an idiot, but he's not an idiot. But
why do they want him to go there? Because Cuba isn't respecting human rights? That's fucking rich.
I know. I know. I know. When Obama is going to talk with dissidents there, but that's really a PR thing that everyone does to make it look like they're not being communists all of a sudden.
Yeah.
And I, you know, there is a dissident community there, obviously, but I don't know that we're the people that are in the position to tell them to start respecting human rights.
Yeah.
So, and they are very vocal about that when you go there. When you talk to, because I once heard a group of people who had basically been the people that named all the dissidents that got rounded, like the spies that basically, like I went and heard the spies that rounded up the dissidents speak at one point in Cuba.
Oh, wow.
Because, well, they'll let you do that. I mean, they're not afraid to let you speak to the pro-government forces that rounded up the dissidents. But even they were sort of like, listen, I get that you guys don't approve of what we're doing here, but it's really fucking rich coming from you. Like, they had no respect for our horror at anything that they had been up to.
I'm sure. Because
they were like, I don't see you not having the death penalty. So, you know, in any case.
But I think also the Cubans are going to love Obama. And I think that's going to be...
I think diplomatic victories are what you do in a situation like this. That's, I mean, we were even talking about Carter and what the Carter, you know, today while we were at the beach, my mom and I were talking about Carter, as you do.
Sure.
But we were talking about, you know, I was saying, because I have been encouraging on this podcast and I continue to encourage voters to consider the long game when they vote. And that's why I'm supporting Sanders, because I think that that's playing the long game. I think that changes the conversation more so than just, you know, making a defensive vote into a system that doesn't have anything to do with me in the first place. And I was saying sort of, I think, you know, when you vote the long game, you can also see history as the long game, and you can see that there are benefits to even presidencies that we consider failures. Even if Bernie Sanders goes in there for 4 years and everyone hates him, we will talk about issues differently when he leaves than we did when he came in. And that will, I think, in the long game, be a good thing.
Yeah.
Just as we were talking about how, as much as Carter gets considered this like massive failure for the Democrats, he changed our relationship with a lot of countries in the world in the time that he was in office in a way that really kept us out of wars for at least 30 years. It took a lot of work to undo all the diplomacy that he had done. And that's a long game too. So maybe it's not like, no, I mean, it's not like maybe the Carter presidency wasn't the most rousing success that we've had, but Democrats still can be proud that, you know, there was something accomplished there that changed the trajectory of the nation at that time.
Yeah.
And that was important. So in any case, I think this is another example of diplomacy plays the long game. Obama can play the long game here. And that's really, I think, the smartest way to play this. And he's been good at doing that.
Yeah.
Exactly. So he's the right person to deal with this.
Yeah.
But commercial flights are about to start up.
Yeah.
When are we going to go there?
I know. We've been
talking
about
it. It's so embarrassing that we haven't done it yet.
I know.
I get so jealous. I'm so jealous of Obama. I've been jealous of everyone who's gone there in the last year because it's every person I know except me. And I don't know how you're even handling yourself because I've never been there. You've never been there.
Have you been?
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
She's been. Of course.
Of course.
Don't be ridiculous.
As Carla knows.
Right. It's like a ridiculous question. But in any case, I don't even know how you're handling yourself at this point because it's getting embarrassing, friend.
Yeah, it is.
But so, in any case. The president's also going on to other parts of Latin America. He's sort of on a diplomacy tour. He's going to Argentina because they have a new president to kind of talk about how we can have a less tense relationship with them.
Yeah.
And then
oh God.
There's other kinds of diplomacy.
Paula Page is a total buffoon, guys.
Correct.
I mean,
that's it.
I don't even... He's always saying something ridiculous and totally incendiary, and he's usually putting down a group or multiple groups of people while he's doing it.
Right.
And he's just like this insane, bombastic... He's a less smart Chris Christie, almost. I mean, which is saying
a more conservative Chris Christie, even. Because he's a kind of conservative that Chris Christie can't be in New Jersey. Right. He's the kind of insane. He's the kind of conservative right. that is insane.
But can you do that in Maine, though? What's going on in Maine? I've never been there either.
You can. That's a question. I mean, that's a question. That is a question. But also, Maine is a state that I think you can go in any extreme direction you want. I feel like in Maine, you could also elect Bernie Sanders. Who's to stop you? Okay. Like, I feel like Maine is like the sort of weirdest parts of New Hampshire plus the kind of richest parts of, you know, like the sort of Rhode Island, like this, right. the Eastern Seaboard, because
I have
beautiful vacation right.
And I have no reference for this. None. Like,
it's
a zero.
Appalachia.
I've never been to New
Cape
England
Cod.
It's like, at all.
Yeah. It's, I mean, it's, yeah. it's.
Well, there is that. I mean, I know just from my own family, my father has had a cousin who there was her. In her lifetime, they were both 90 years old, and with her, she had great-great-grandchildren, whereas he just had a granddaughter. And so, like, there were many, many generations.
Yeah. Okay. That's what's happening in Maine. Two extra generations right. are happening in Maine.
From what I understand about what happened with LePage is there was, as someone split, there was a good candidate, and the Democrats picked another candidate. And this guy ran also, so they split the vote.
Oh, got it.
And that's
okay.
how.
There was a spoiler.
A spoiler.
We've been talking a lot about spoilers recently, and here we have an example of a spoiler. Yes. And then you get Paula Page.
Yeah. Who this week.
Yeah. Has invented a new kind of fly.
Yes. Well, they were talking, he was at some event, and he was talking about asylum seekers, which he said was the biggest problem in our state.
Is that the biggest problem
really,
in Maine?
Do they have, like, a big influx of asylum seekers in Maine, by
Maybe
the way?
Maybe from Canada?
Maybe, I know, yeah. He said, and all it's, so he went on, he said, what happens, speaking about the asylum seekers, is you get hepatitis C, tuberculosis, AIDS, HIV, and the Zika fly.
A type of fly unknown to me.
Well, it's not a real thing.
Because it's not a real fly.
Right. He was speaking about the Zika virus.
Right.
Which is a virus.
And it is spread by mosquitoes.
Correct.
Which are not flies.
Which are not flies. It's not
which
spread by
the
Zika.
Which do not live in that part of the world.
Which do not live in Maine.
No. And they're not, people aren't bringing that.
No. Right. You can't bring a mosquito with you from South America.
I would.
Central America.
I don't think that all of these people are bringing AIDS and hepatitis
C. Let me tell you what people are bringing to Maine.
Either.
Heroin.
Well, sure.
That's what they're bringing to all of New England.
Yeah.
That's the real threat.
Yeah.
And they're not bringing it because there's a demand already baked in.
And didn't he talk about heroin at one point, too? Because wasn't he talking about all the people coming in and, like, the black people, like, impregnating their women or something like that?
Yes, he did
that
have
in
a really choice quote.
So he always has
about
something profound to say about whatever the issue of the day is.
So true. And this is no exception.
Yeah.
But in any case, Maine, apparently site of the Zika fly.
Overrun.
Overrun by Zika flies. And tuberculosis.
Oh, God.
So lots going on over there.
Oh, boy.
Oh, and we finally have proof that Obama killed Scalia.
We know. Now.
Definitive proof.
Due to some sort of biblical numerology.
Because of numerology.
It doesn't really
You know numerology. You get numerology.
Yeah, right. There's this guy named Rick Wiles. He's one of those end times pastors, you know, who thinks that Jesus is definitely, could happen as you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah, no, I mean, he might be returning right now.
Yeah. Anyway, but he thinks...
Open your chimney.
He thinks he's... He thinks he's got it all figured out.
Yeah.
He says the 13th, which is when Scalia died, was the 44th day of 2016. And then Obama is the 44th president of the United States. So you have this numerology thing taking place.
So you get it.
Right?
You get what's happening.
Yeah.
You get how the number 44
See how that all
means
adds
that
up.
Obama is the Antichrist. You know.
Oh, boy.
So he said that Obama had to kill Scalia and deliberately left the pillow on his face as a message to everybody else. Don't mess with us. Mm. We can murder a justice and get away with it.
That's right.
So he thinks that officials in Washington are all terrified.
Yeah.
They know the regime murdered
That's
a justice.
Right. This came on the heels of Glenn Beck saying earlier in the week that God needed Scalia to die so that Ted Cruz could become president, which
is
I'm
a
not
curious
really
choice.
That.
I can't imagine how we could possibly follow that.
No, I can't either. But anyway, at least we know now.
At least we know. And before we go, we have an editorial from one Carlin Orchard
excited about
that
this.
We probably should have included at the top, but we were so excited about polls that we forgot, which is an editorial about millennials and the millennial vote from the perspective of a non-millennial of the generation of many people who've been voting for Hillary Clinton and discouraging millennials from thinking that they're real people. Yeah.
What this comes, where this comes from is when women who were kind of the mothers of the feminist movement started coming out and lecturing young women about their support in who they were supporting for president. Gloria Steinem made her famous comment about how the young women were going to flocking to Bernie Sanders' campaign because that's where the boys were. And then there was Madeleine Albright and Barbara Boxer, who talked about these women, you know, they didn't understand that they were supposed to support a woman because that's what will make the biggest difference. And for me, it really troubled me because I grew up at a time when the modern women's movement began. I was a part of that and did all the small things that people do. And women such as Gloria Steinem were kind of bossing us around at that time, and it felt very much like that's what she was doing. It was a time also when our generation was criticized by the older generation, and she, being in between those two generations, was one of the people who helped lead us out of the morass that we were in. Mm-hmm. But you know, she still was, you know, she still was very kind of very bossy about the way she did it. And this comment sounded very familiar to me when she made this comment about looking for the boys. And I had a kind of a funny experience when I was growing up because Betty Friedan, who is considered the mother of the women's movement, knew my father. And she lived in the next town from where we lived at the time she was writing The Feminine Mystique. And she used to come to our house, you know, periodically to visit with my father. And she would walk in the door and kind of slam it into my mother and my sisters and I. And my mother at the time was working full-time, going to school full-time, and plus managing a family of six. And Betty Friedan never came to see my mother or to talk to any of the women in a household full of women.
Right, all women.
Yeah. She always came and she would take my father off to talk about important things with him. So for me, when Gloria Steinem made this comment about the boys, I thought, well, actually, it was those women who led this movement, who were there going to be where the boys were, because a bad habit that women at that time, young women, had to kind of break and try to really analyze and think about. But what I'm most troubled by is that I don't see that Hillary Clinton is doing anything to reach out to the millennials. I voted in 1968, which was a somewhat similar year. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of, you know, it was the year that Eugene McCarthy did very well, and then he started. Lyndon Johnson was going to run for re-election.
Right.
He decided not to run for re-election.
Right. He did briefly, didn't he? He lost a primary or two or something, right? And then I'm out.
McCarthy won a primary.
Right. Yes.
Two.
Correct. Yeah.
And then Bobby Kennedy came up, and mm-hmm. he looked like the candidate
who probably would have won.
He would have won. The young were very enthusiastic about him, very excited about him, and he was murdered.
Yeah.
And suddenly, we were there. The young people were there, with no candidate, and the Democratic Party basically turned their backs on us and shoved Hubert Humphrey down our throats. Now, mm-hmm. I have to say, as you know, in retrospect, actually, one of the votes I'm proudest of was voting for Hubert Humphrey, even though I had to hold my nose. Because as I learned from him later when he was a senator, that he was working to get us a single-payer health plan. He was working for all these things that
are
very important.
At the time, being a Democrat was different.
Yeah, it was
better.
But it was and people would say, yeah, but he wants to just keep the war going. And that was kind of the line that he gave, because the Vietnam War was very important at that time.
Yeah.
That was the line that he gave. But at the same time, when I learned later how hurt he was by all of the destruction of young men, you know, I realized in his heart of hearts, he would not have been able to act the same way that had been acted. So that's why it turned out I was proud of that vote, but he lost. And we ended up with Richard Nixon, which I consider to be the beginning of this conservative time that we've been living through. It wasn't Ronald Reagan. It was when Richard Nixon became president.
It absolutely was. Because even Johnson, who obviously was not loved by people on the left because of how the war was going at the time, was,
the civil rights front, and had the sort of
bills that were sort of part of the Great Society bills that he got passed and things like that. Right. I mean, so I think you're absolutely right. It was really, it was Nixon. You're right.
Yeah. But what happened was that the young people, when they were treated so shabbily by the Democratic Party, they walked away. And they never, in a sense, they never became a part of the political game. These were people who were out demonstrating. These were people who fought very strongly for the civil rights movement and then the Vietnam War, against the Vietnam War.
Sure.
They were politically astute people, but they were turned off. And my concern now is if Hillary doesn't really address the issue, if she is the candidate, of what to do to make sure this young energy stays in the fold,
right,
that it's going to be disastrous, because we could end up with a Donald Trump.
Right,
or a Ted Cruz.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
And my big concern has always been that she does not know how to.
I think so too. And so many people don't. I mean, it's obviously not just her, but you have, when millennials talk to the older generation, they think, you want these free things. You want everything handed to you. And
it's like when your friends used to say to you,
we want the same opportunities that your generation had.
Also, I mean,
when
your generation got free things.
That's what I was going to say.
Pension.
I mean, it wasn't a pension. College was
a
hundredth of the cost was.
No,
now,
and
minimum wage is only three or four times higher than it was. I mean, when you just in actual dollar-wise,
I think the minimum wage is seven times higher and college costs are like 100 times higher. It's like that.
Yeah. It's not that we want free things. We just
want
to have the same opportunities that the generation is screwing us over got.
Right. But also another part of it that I think that no one's really paying attention to is I think that the crash of 2008 happened as your generation was coming of age.
Yeah.
And you got screwed by that. And it never has been addressed. And those same issues are still there. And that's a very important part. That's, if you were a part of that, which Hillary Clinton was a part of that, it's going to take a big stretch for her to understand just how damaging that event was.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you. I'm not certain that she has the ability to have
even
these
find these thoughts
in her,
in someone else's.
It's not because she's stupid, because she's not.
No, it's she's not equipped to understand a political reality that she has not been facing this whole time.
I agree.
Right.
And I think that when we talk about voters over 65 and her winning them going away, one thing that was brought to my attention by my own mother as well is that most of her friends that are her age have children that are much older than me. So the people who are the parents of the generation that really got screwed in that crash are voting for Sanders in higher numbers.
Mm-hmm.
It's the generation who gave birth to the Reagan generation.
Yeah, I mean, my parents are voting for Sanders.
Of course.
My dad's a former Republican, for God's sake.
Exactly.
I mean,
we're all really proud of Brent's dad. He's our favorite.
Shout out to Steve.
Shout out to Steve. I think that in large part, that baby boom generation did, many of them gave birth older than had been done in previous generations. But for the most part, that generation's kids are much older than us. And so that's why they don't understand what's happening.
Yeah.
Well,
because you've been explaining to your friends.
Yeah, no,
your friends have older kids than you. And you've been like, no, this generation's pretty great.
And also what I found, which is really very troubling, is I found with the older generation, they're very angry about this. I mean, they're crotchety. People get crotchety as they get older. And so, when I, the day after the New Hampshire primary and I went to my exercise class with all these people in their 60s and 70s, they were fit to be tied because these young people had messed everything up.
Right.
And it's, and part of it is they don't know any millennials. But part of it also is that they want these things. This is my exercise class is in a very lefty area of
right.
New York
right.
City. These are people who live yeah. in
yeah, you're not going to a conservative exercise
no,
class.
No,
yeah.
I'm not. But they are they have this kind of idea of the way things are, and they're not ready to give up. And yeah. they really need to say, you know what? Except for like one woman there, she said, you know, I demonstrated for years. Now I just want to enjoy the beauty. Now she didn't appear to be angry, but
right.
but it's a real challenge because they part of it is that they're very nervous about giving up their mm-hmm. you know their ideas of what's supposed to happen, and instead of just saying, you know what, we're old, it's your future, you take it on, there's this pushback, and it's ugly. It's not very pleasant.
This is what happens when you have an activist generation, and that's why I'm proud of us guys.
I'm proud of you too. I'm proud.
That's why I think we're doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In any case, that's the podcast this week.
More results next week.
More results next week. It's a snowball of results at this point.
That's right.
It's just going to keep on keeping on.
Yeah.
We will talk to you then, and thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Carla.
My mom. I can't say Carla. I can say mom.
Say
I can only
mom.
Say thank you, mom.
Yeah.
Calling your mom Carla is a weird thing to do. But we will, I'm sure that you'll be shouted out again soon on the podcast because it seems to be 25% your ideas at this point that we're on the podcast. So,
yeah.
In any case, we'll talk to you all next week.
Bye.
Bye.